Byron Radio.
Colossal vegetables. Awe-inspiring floral art. Enviable plant nursery displays. No, we're not talking about the Houses of Westminster. Although I suppose those giant vegetables are getting out and about, aren't they, Nick Smith?
They certainly are. They're getting around.
They are indeed. You know, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, outrageous. Never mind. The 44th Autumn Flower Show is about to hit us in a week and a bit's time, and I can already almost taste the excitement that's actually coming through. Because I think the autumn one, I mean, I love the spring one, that's fantastic, but the autumn one, somehow it's that season of harvest festivals and so on. It's just a little bit special, isn't it, Nick?
It is, and I think we've said this before, Alex, the idea that we're very lucky in that we can begin the season, you know, and start the season at the beginning of the year with spring, and then we have that lovely idea of sort of ending the season with autumn and just celebrating all the harvest that we've had and celebrating all the great stuff we've achieved in the season, you know.
Looking at the programme, which I was privileged to actually receive a preview copy of from that point of view, some lovely gardens. I mean, I love the We'll Meet Again garden that's come through to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the start of World War II, of course, from that point of view. That looks awesome. Actually, they're all nature reclaimed, creating careers and creative spaces, celebration of rewilding, as opposed to rewilding. Easily confused, but never mind. And, of course, something without which no Northeast Horticultural Society would be connected at all, down the bog. You know, genius. Take that, Chelsea, is what I say. Take that, you know. Do you go down the bog in Chelsea? I think not.
Do you know what? We just love the idea that all these sort of borders that we create for autumn, obviously it's different to spring, but with the borders, it's just such a wide variety of people that are getting involved. Mm. And it's lovely to see these titles coming in because this is what people are interested in. This is what these societies, these groups, these charities, these community organisations really want to talk about and explore with the public. And we're very grateful to be able to host that, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I'm personally looking forward to Down the Bog because it's something which I think will sort of epitomise the joy and wonderments of the North of England Horticultural Society. Sadly, Chloe Rose, the wonderful singer-songwriter, who should be joining us on location at the actual event itself, hasn't made it to the studio. She's probably got lost somewhere between here and the joys of Cleethorpes, but never mind. But we do have Fergus Jeffs in the studio with us. Fergus, you've been listening to talk about the Harrogate Autumn Flower Show. What are your thoughts as a Leicester man?
Well, we certainly don't have those in Leicester.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah. That says it all, Nick, doesn't it?
They giant don't vegetables are an international language.
Well, yeah, we have many things in Leicester, but we don't have flower shows. Mm. I don't know, maybe they do have them in the East Midlands area, but I don't know.
They're not patched on the NEHS flower shows.
I bet they don't.
I think to be fair, we're very lucky because we attract an audience from all over the country, and that's something we're very proud to be able to do because there is something for everyone, whether you're from Cornwall or whether you're from Scotland. You know, it's just come together and see what the North can produce, the fantastic things the North can produce.
You've got your beekeeping, you've got your cacti and succulents, you've got your carnations, you've got your hardy plants, you've got your plant heritage, and of course you've got the roses and all sorts of other fantastic folk there. Plus, of course, lots of demonstrations dealing with food, dealing with live music. I see the LA jazz band are actually there, not Los Angeles. Or are they? I don't know. Have you flown them over? I mean, it's work from that point of view.
I don't think our international is that far.
Well, I don't know. I think we're getting over to Wales and Robin Pierce today. So hopefully all will be well. The Clifton and Lightcliff Brass Band as well. Or perhaps actually to keep the vernacular going, like I should say Brass Band. But, maybe
Brass happens. Band,
exactly.
Yep.
It's great. And is it something that you know, each year, we've talked about this before, it tends to evolve rather than revolve in terms of the line. It's very much an evolutionary side of things because the core stuff that's there, no pun intended, cores, you obviously get them in apples, etc., is it's a quality show which is competitive, but at the same time it's a fantastic couple of days out, or indeed two or three days out, really.
I think from our point of view, yes, you're absolutely right. What we like to do is we like to keep that core because that's obviously what our regular visitors come to. But then added on to that, we just always like something a little bit different just to make sure it keeps it fresh and keeps it different. We're always looking at different things to incorporate and, you know, different stories that are relevant that year, that month, whatever it may be.
Well, talking about that, we wouldn't be remiss if we didn't actually talk about the heavyweight battle of the monster veg. Because these are the classic ones, etc. The heaviest cabbage, the heaviest marrow, parsnip, pumpkin, carrot, potato, tomato, leek, beetroot, and, of course, a stick of rhubarb.
Sure, that's got to be the main attraction each year. I mean, I bet loads of people come all over from Cornwall just to see the giant veg. Well, I would.
Well, I mean, we'll get you up there, Fergus, because the internationally renowned Heavy Onion Championship, you can take your premiership. Yeah, Heavy, sponsored by Kitchen Garden, will include a world record weigh-in to find out if the current title holder can be toppled. Fergus, would you like to have a little guess at the current holder of the world title for giant onion? What sort of weight do you think it would come in at?
I know, 20 kilograms?
A little bit high, 8.47 kilos, 18 pounds, 11 ounces. That is a substantial piece of onion, is it not, Nick?
It is a beast, and I seem to recall that particular prize-winning onion went on to be cooked by Gordon Ramsay on the BBC One show. Mm, mm. And I think he cooked onion rings, and they looked like inner tubes. They were vast. So, yes, it's amazing what you can do with giant veg.
Do you know, that could be our quote of the day already. You know, just 8 minutes into the show, Nick, and, you know, it's amazing what you can do with giant veg. Could actually be smashing the whole thing from that point of view. If you want to follow the annual world record, of course, the social media are actually there, but be there, 12 noon, Friday the 13th of September. That's when the thing will actually be happening from that point of view, and it's always worthwhile. We might just pick it up on the Saturday. Actually, no, I won't be picking it up because I'm not really doing the weight training, but we will certainly sort of connect with that. Actually, we may be there on the Friday. Who knows? It's always an exciting event from that point of view. What are you looking forward to, Nick, over the show itself? Or is it a case of, no, I'm already thinking about next April and the Harrogate Springflower Show?
No, do you know what? I am in full flow with this autumn, and what I'm looking forward to is to seeing all those people again, those specialists, those growers, those people that spend so much time throughout the year creating these fantastic exhibits and these fantastic displays, and I only get that chance to meet them this autumn. And so that's really what I'm looking forward to, saying hello and seeing what sort of season they've had, what they've got to showcase, you know, the new things they've got, and generally just being able to get knowledge and get advice and learn more about what we do.
The passion always impresses me. I mean, it's something that there's actually, I mean, these are people who are not just competitive, but they are seriously competitive in this whole side of things. Flowershow.org.uk is the go-to website to find out further details. Now, is it too late to still buy tickets online, Nick? Or is it a case of, well, you've got to hurry, you've got to rush it. We're on the 13th or 15th of September, so it's just about enough time.
So tickets are still available online, or tickets are always available on the door as well. So.
It's awesome. So we're definitely looking forward to it. I'm sort of hesitant here because next week, actually, on the show, we actually welcome as a special guest, making his debut from Sweden, actually, no less, New York's finest kid Creole, Auguste Darnell, is joining us next week. And obviously, there's a plant connection here, clearly, with kid Creole and his coconuts. See what I did there, Nick? It's great.
I like that.
Yeah, just build the other. But Fergus, would you like to put those last two questions to show director Nick Smith?
I certainly would. Nick, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show this evening?
I certainly have, Fergus.
And will you be joining us again in the future?
I'd like to very much.
See, this is the gentleman who should be actually our next Prime Minister. You know, I keep saying this about most of our contributors, but I think, Nick, you know, if he was invited to actually take over the whole routine, certainly do a better job than at present. That's the only political thing I'll say at this particular moment, Nick, but, you know, there we are. Prime Minister Nick Smith, it has a nice ring to it, really, somehow. I
think it's memorable.
A simple ring.
Exactly. And you're used to dealing with vegetables as well, so, you know.
and the maximum security, even after plastic surgery. So go on and squeals at the FBI. We can make a deal, make it worth your while. There's a gentleman that's going round, turning the joint upside down. Stupid gent, ha-cha-cha-cha. He's an old ex-con that's been away. Now he's back, no one say. Stupid gent, ha-cha-cha-cha. After all the talk, then they wired him, and he took a walk with his crooked friends, and they joked about the good old days, and he recorded it on a reel of tape. He caught the mug who did the forgery, and the babe in charge of larceny. So the FBI, they rewarded him, because they like a guy who will stab a friend.
He'll be on the show next week with Bill Coles as his warm-up act. August Darnell, Kid Creole, is joining us. So a little heads up that you're probably too young to remember Kid Creole and his coconuts, aren't you, Bill?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
You mean things like I'm a Wonderful Thing, Baby, and Annie, I'm not your daddy. You know, kind of just haven't quite gathered you. Don't mind. These are classic. Anyway, he's very, very exciting stuff with that movie. But still, moving on. We send best wishes to Eva because Eva's been poorly. Eva's actually in a hospital in Hull. Oh, that's dreadful. And it is, actually. Not the hospital in Hull is dreadful. I'm going to hasten to add that, but it's just very sad that she hasn't been able to wrap up her summer season that she's doing in Withernsea because she's in the hospital. And even worse news, William. Chloe Rose has had an
accident.
Well, Chloe Rose has had an accident en route. She spun off the road, and she's just texted to say that she won't be in. So, you know, because she's had an accident, and she's okay though. But you know, we've lost Chloe Rose. We've lost Eva McDonald. You know, thankfully, you know, the rest of the government seems to be in fit shape, or is it? I don't know. What about yourself, William? Now that the festival's wrapped up, and people in Scotland can get on with the eminently sensible line of fighting for what democracy proves that they actually want, which is complete independence. Is life okay, or is it just a case of if you wrote the kind of characters in your Eton Mess scenario, or indeed Dave Cameron's school days, your publisher would have turned around and said, William, you're a fantasist, DeVoy, a fantasist.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it's all very tame up here compared to what's going on down in England. And yes, you've probably got your TV on at the moment to watch the vote.
Well, we're keeping an eye on it, shall we say. But at the end of the day, after last night's wonderful scenario, where can we actually go? Where can we go? Down to the Lake Haifea. It's a haircut 100, the number there, but you probably don't recognise that either. I don't know. Here we are. I'm building you into all of these wonderful classic 70s and 80s references, William, and you're sort of just biting today.
I'm getting them, but I don't think the listener's getting them.
Yeah, but that's why we like to have different layers, like the onion. The onion we were talking about just a matter of moments ago with Nick Smith, that you peel the onion back and you get not tears, not accents that impact on your lacrimator glands, or even lacrimatory glands, tear glands. But it kind of impacts on the whole experience of the whole system. For instance, After the Flood, which is written by Cassandra Montag, is a searing, often brutal story of a mother's terrifying quest to find her missing daughter in a post-apocalyptic world. And Cassandra is actually off to the fabulous place of Lincoln, Nebraska, amongst other things. So we're connecting, you know, Lincoln, England, and Lincoln, Nebraska. Never let it be said we do our bit for festivals and various other bits and pieces. Actually, William, you're part of a triple whammy of fantastic authors that we're into now, because there's your little slot, which, of course, we're right in the middle of. So why are you chuntering on like this, Alex Leftuke? Let him speak. We then follow that with Cassandra Montag and then Claire Harmon. So have you got any words or thoughts you'd like to actually maybe share with us or talk about the writing experience, etc.? I mean, Claire Harmon's latest book, Murder by the Book, is all about the murder of Lord William Russell in 1840, which scandalised London, and also was a best-selling crime novel which polarised public opinion and initiated the following debate, which I'm going to ask you, William. Can a work of fiction, Dave Cameron's School Days, do real harm?
Well, of course it can. I mean, you've got many books being banned for because the authorities are outraged. Them. Lady Chatterley's Lover was scandalised. The with, you know, all that sex going on, and who would have thought it? Yeah, it was banned for a long time. Sales went through the roof. Now it all seems pretty tame, doesn't it?
Or are we heading back to another prurient society, or a society which actually looks for purity and such like? I mean, could we actually start by saying, next step in terms of Parliament, let's ban Christmas?
I think books and songs are not going to be banned by any authority, but you're going to get various minority lots saying that something should be banned, which will probably be wonderful for sales. But no Western authority would ban things. Though if you're over in China or Russia, yeah, you could get lots of stuff banned there.
I mean, we've recently had the release of Salman Rushdie's latest text, which isn't going to be banned and could actually be shortlisted, indeed has been shortlisted, as far as I'm aware, for a prize.
The Booker Prize.
Literally, the Booker Prize. And that's a very much a take on the whole essence of travel and various other sort of things that we're sort of faced with. I mean, Fergus, do you feel that the literature, works of fiction, can cause harm and harmfulness and so on?
I wouldn't say in the modern day, but if you go back, there probably were texts that were seen as, you know, scandalous, which seemed pretty tame by today. Because I think, I know obviously you've seen it throughout history with music, which, it was famous, Frankie Goes to Hollywood had it, and the Sex Pistols. And then
The BBC even banned a Dean Friedman number back in the day called McDonald's Girl. I shall say no more.
Yeah, and there was like Je T'aime as well and all that. And that only served to make them more popular.
Strange enough, we won't be playing Je T'aime on the Simon Radio tonight, but we won't play the Dean Friedman number. If not this week, then possibly next week as well. So it's just a thought there. Far too racy for yourself, William. You'd have to tune out. Listen, how's the driving been going? Have you got a passenger side door so you don't actually have to do a sort of Flintstone-esque sort of line as you're kind of posing with your son on a driving lesson? And is this some kind of challenge that you set up for yourself to kind of, you know, prove that you've still got it?
Yes, exactly. Taking your son for a driving lesson when he's not quite ready for it, he'd only had a few hours with the driving instructor, was hairy. And I think he needs a few more lessons before he goes out with me again. I had not a clue what to do when we were stalling on these junctions for about the 15th time.
Yeah, well, it's a worrying thing, William, a worrying thing. And I have to say that the image that we see on our Facebook of yourself, you know, looking a little bit concerned about your son and so on, I mean, it's partly paternal care, partly sort of paternal pride that's actually there. But at the same time, you know, did you get through it? That's the important thing. Did you get through it?
Yeah, he got through it. I mean, after about half an hour, Dex said, I've got fed up with this, and so we swapped around. It was an error going out during the afternoon rush hour. So anyway, maybe a Sunday morning when the roads are clear, we'll have another stab.
Really? So it hasn't actually ended everything now. He's in the studio, just about to pop his headphones on, some way, shape or form, find a set. We have the return, welcome return, of Steph Wright. How are you, Steph?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Excellent.
Gusto, marvellous. And all sorts of other things, et cetera. Now, Steph, you're a father, you're a parent.
I am a father.
Did you ever decide to give driving lessons to either your son or daughter?
All of them.
All of them?
Spend a long time and enjoyed actually teaching them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's quite a bonding... it can be bonding, and I'm sure a lot of people can fall out with their kids, and their kids can absolutely not want to have their parents sat next to them in a car, but for us it worked really, really well.
Well, okay, I mean, that's just, there is the image of Bill Coles with his son then, as you say, the official line, celebrating by taking Dexter out for the first driving lesson together. I think William looks just a little bit nervous there.
A little bit nervous.
Yes, a little bit, you know. Clearly, I think, unlike the Flintstones, we haven't actually got a sort of removable floorboard, but at the same time, you know, the passenger door does seem to be missing, so... It's going to be. I mean, Steph, any advice for William then in terms of how the next lesson should go?
Keep calm. Keep your hands on your knees. Don't jump for the steering wheel. I think what I used to do was try to put the brake on. So you're sitting there, and my son or daughter can see me sort of pushing against the base of the car. Trying to brake for them, trying to do everything for them, but...
William? Is this sort of, you know...
Yes, it does. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what we're about at Siren Radio's Midweek Drive, 23 minutes or so past 5 o'clock. We actually bring those paternal challenges together and hopefully solve them through working through those issues. Fergus, it's time for you to put those last two questions to Bill Coles.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show this evening?
Such spontaneity.
Yes, I have, Fergus. Thank you so much for asking.
And will you be joining us again next week? Hopefully you will.
I do hope so. Yes, thank you.
Again, just awesome, awesome spontaneity. Children think we make them, but we don't. They exist somewhere else, before us, before time. They come into the world and make us. They make us by breaking us first. Not my words, but an excerpt from the prologue of the latest epic by the awesome Cassandra Montag, online now from the joys of the United States of America in Nebraska. Cassandra, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very good indeed. Now, I see, Cassandra, that little connection here between the L word. Here we are, Siren Radio in Lincoln, England, and you're, of course, connecting with Lincoln, Nebraska.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, I have the festival coming up this weekend.
It was meant to be, clearly meant to be in so many ways. It's the start of a whole range of things there, because you've got the Nebraska Book Festival on September the 7th, the Bookworm Reading and Q&A on Sunday, September the 8th, the Literature Lovers Night Out at the Valley Bookseller on the 9th, then that's continued into September the 10th, the Novel Neighbour Luncheon on Wednesday, September the 11th, and the Omaha Literary Festival Opening Party, Part A, on Friday the 13th of September. Lots of reasons there to get on the jet and fly over from England to, you know, Omaha and Nebraska and so on. And, of course, the Oklahoma Book Festival, where presumably Cassandra the Corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
Yes, yeah.
On September the 21st and the Iowa City Book Festival on October the 5th. Now, all of those delights tie into your own sort of background, which is extraordinarily fascinating because you grew up outside a small town in rural Nebraska, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, I grew up on an acreage close to a small river outside a small town, and I very much had a sort of nature-loving childhood where I just spent tons of time outside, and I think that was really the beginning of my love for the environment and my connection really to the earth and, you know, the changing seasons and the way everything is changing.
I'm particularly interested in the fact that you always like to make things, pastel paintings of landscapes you hadn't seen before, rafts that sunk in the creek near your house. It's almost like the ideal mid-American childhood, isn't it?
It maybe sounds too much that way, but it was in some ways. I mean, it was very much a creative childhood, you know, playing by the river, drawing pictures, imagining things. My parents really let me kind of just run wild, maybe in part because we lived out in the country, and so it was very safe. And so I just had tons of time to imagine other worlds. It really helped to foster my imagination.
In many ways, you were presumably just an amalgam of Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn, and Becky Thatcher. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
all in one perfectly put together package. And at 7 years of age, Fergus and Steph, we had a fantastic first ever picture book series that featured a man who lived alone in the wilderness with his dog fighting together for survival. Is it still out there, Cassandra?
Right.
Is it still there? Can we actually still get hold of that picture book?
You know what? It's not for sale, but I do still have the copy. So maybe I'll take some pictures of them and post them on social media so people can have a look at my first book series.
Now, it's clear to say that the latest text that you've produced, which we had that short excerpt from, will be denied by the President of the United States because he doesn't believe it's happening. But After the Flood is clearly focused in this era of dystopian, eco-catastrophic fiction, presumably. But share with us how you would actually sort of relate this, which was already going to be translated into 17 languages and has been optioned for television by Churnin Entertainment. So talk to us about After the Flood.
Yeah, absolutely. So After the Flood is a post-apocalyptic novel that's set roughly a century in the future after a global flood has reduced the world to just an archipelago of mountaintops in an expanse of the ocean. And it's a story about a mother who goes on this dangerous journey to rescue her daughter, who is held captive up in a northern colony. And it's really a story of survival and a story of a mother's love.
We took the opening lines from the short excerpt of the introduction to the book. I can say that moving on from that, it gets gripping stuff. I mean, that's just teased the reader no end. It's no surprise that Publishers Weekly have actually said Montag's first novel, an intriguing and innovative woman-centred swashbuckling quest narrative, centres on the social impact of climate change a little over a century from now. Readers who enjoy post-apocalyptic fiction and strong female heroes will appreciate Myra, a super survivalist who combines Wonder Woman's physical prowess with the unsinkable Molly Brown's resilience. Excellent. Steph, are you intrigued by this by this sort of description? Yep. Steph,
you've used some amazing words there.
Yeah, it's exactly. The words alone are awesome. There's a quick introduction to Cassandra. We've got Steph in the studio. We've also got Fergus in the studio. Fergus, you're a literature graduate, literature soul.
Yeah.
Is this the sort of thing which you say, I want to check that post-apocalyptic
action? Yeah, I think that I read the kind of brief synopsis of it, and I think it's one which is obviously very telling in the kind of the climate change kind of debate at the moment, of a lot of people fear for the future, despite what the two main guys in the White House say. I am intrigued by this, and I just wanted to ask you, how did it feel when you were writing this book, again, the finishing stages of it, and then Churning Entertainment comes over the phone and says, we want to make this a TV series? What was your reaction when you got that phone call or email?
I was shocked and thrilled. I began writing as a poet, and I really have been writing for years and years in obscurity and isolation. And so then to get, this email and the phone call out of the blue that, the book is selling in multiple languages and Churnin Entertainment wants to adapt it, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it. It was just thrilling.
Well, richly deserved. Now, one of the questions we put to Bill Coles and was put to our next author, Claire Harmon, who's actually going to be in Lincoln, England on the 25th of September for our book festival, is, can a work of fiction do real harm? Now, I guess it's a bit of a loaded question in many ways, but, from your own writing, Steph, writing Cassandra, would you turn around and say, actually, I want people to think about this. A century from now, what happens if Nebraska is a floodplain, is literally just flooded with water and so on?
Right. Yeah, so the question is, can literature do harm, I think that more so, I would say that literature can wake people up. So maybe in a sense it can do harm, and that waking up to things can be uncomfortable. Literature can remind us to pay attention to things around us that we may be ignoring in our daily lives. So I think it can be a bit of a jolt. And that would be my hope, at least, for fiction, that people are imaginatively being transported into a world that is maybe terrifying and maybe can feel harmful, but in reality it's also, really invigorating and makes them relate to their own lives in a different way.
Spellbinding and aching at every turn, After the Flood is an evocative tale of despair and fierce hope existing within a shattered future. Cassandra Montag weaves together a watery post-apocalyptic world that will leave readers breathless. Steph, you've had a chance to have a little peruse on that. I mean, what are your own thoughts on this whole field?
Well, I think it's so important that people are given this picture of the future. Star Wars gives us a picture of a future. This picture...
Waterworld, another one.
Waterworld, definitely.
Exactly.
it's got to be put into people's minds that if we continue down a path, then this is what the world could look like in 100 years' time. And if we don't tell the stories and we just walk blindly into a future without any realisation of where we're going, then we won't make any decisions that could perhaps change that future. So, I think it's very, very important. And, the thing that enthuses me just through listening to this conversation is the uptake in interest, because obviously if Cassandra's gone from being an unknown writer to all of a sudden being published in
On the midweek drive for Siren Radio.
Absolutely. That has to obviously be partly down to your skills as a writer, but also down to, I would hope, also down to the fact that your subject is something now that's massively of interest to your target audience, which is fantastic.
I mean, back in the 60s, Cassandra, I recall a fine piece of work called The Drowned World, which was actually written by one of our wonderful, talented new wave science fiction writers of the same sort of category as Brian Aldiss and so on. And Drowned World, which is Ballard, actually, J.G. Ballard. He probably better known for Empire of the Sun and various other things. He kind of was the first person to start talking about this eco-catastrophe side of things. But it seems what you've got with this particular aspect after the flood is again another sort of interesting take in terms of how humanity can actually come to grips with these challenges and so on. But let's move on briefly from that side of things to something else which just intrigues me because of the title, and it's your poetry, as published in Thimble magazine this September, The Potato Eaters. Is this just people? Is this just people who like French fries or sort of, you know, chips or something? What are we talking about here? The Potato Eaters.
Yeah, so that poem is an ekphrastic poem, and it responds to Van Gogh's painting, The Potato Eaters. So, you know, it's a poem that sort of, it tries to get into the mind of the painter a little bit, and it also connect more deeply with the subjects of that painting.
You see, you can sometimes take that surface line and completely negate all of the sort of layers, just like that onion, that giant onion you can actually peel away and find various other sort of bits and pieces on from that point of view.
Absolutely.
I mean, you spent a year in the Netherlands, which is always good when you're actually dealing with how people deal with water and surrounding waters, etc. Do you still feel European, that you're connected to Europe, or is it a case of, no, I ignore everything that goes on outside the United States border?
I love Europe, and I do feel a connection. I'm still in touch with some friends back in the Netherlands, and I actually really miss it. So I would love to return at some point. That'd be very meaningful to me. I felt like I learned a lot from the Dutch in terms of how to think about and handle environmental changes, and I really admire their resilience.
Excellent. Okay. Any further thoughts or questions you'd like to pop at the moment, Steph, to Cassandra?
Yeah, I mean, just what's your view on what's happening out in the States at the moment and the direction of travel? Because there must be a lot of things that go on that we don't hear about that are actually very positive things that are actually making change and new businesses coming up with new ideas to deliver things in different ways that are more sustainable. So what's your inside?
Yeah, I mean, and I absolutely, there is. I think, you know, just being here in the States, I hear a lot also from the younger generation, from the generation that's just a little bit younger than me, sort of grassroots sort of movements and organizing. You know, I hear a lot on social media and in articles about this younger generation knowing that they're the ones who are going to inherit the problems and the major changes that some of the older generation may not live to see. And so they're taking it seriously on a whole new level. And I think there is, I think it's a little bit too gradual, but there is a gradual growing awareness about, you know, some of these massive changes that are coming.
You see, there is hope. There is hope even for that young little Cassandra who used to hide up an apple tree and read books rather than actually do garden chores. It's there, it's important.
Yeah, and their new ideas and their new perspectives are so important, aren't they? You know, we can't keep using the same ideas. And one thing I see is that, I mean, one of the big issues with the younger generation today is that they can't afford to get on the property ladder. They can't do things in the same way as we perhaps did 30 years ago. But actually, one of the benefits of that is people are less committed to ownership of things. They're not going down the same route of collecting their house, collecting their cars, collecting all the bits around them that perhaps our generation
getting all
did.
That stuff.
And so it's not about stuff, it's about experience, it's about doing different things and looking at life in a different way. And actually that becomes slightly more sustainable than everybody just wanting to buy stuff.
Everything
and,
for themselves.
And stuff.
Buy stuff to get more stuff. Anyway, we're not here to do a critique of capitalism because that's a whole new story. Cassandra Montag, actually I've got to ask the question, Cassandra. Montag, of course, translates as Monday in German, but also a major character in the wonderful Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Ever influenced to actually read Montag and his experience in which, of course, firemen are actually set up to burn books in the future.
It's an interesting connection there.
I thought I thought so. It's tenuous, but I can see it sort of working through on that basis.
It is there. Yeah.
You can, of course, go to CassandraMontag.com to find out all about the things we've been chatting about briefly today. And obviously, After the Flood is available, presumably, in all online stores and various other ways of actually purchasing this fantastic text. Cassandra, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
Oh, I've had a lovely time. Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Excellent. So can we look forward to maybe connecting with you again in the very near future?
I would love that, yes.
Yay. Cassandra Montag, fantastic. And from the joys of Nebraska, it's over to Newark, New Jersey. You've been awarded a Ford Prize for Poetry and the Tom Gallen Award in 2016 for a wonderful short story entitled Otherwise Engage, and you've been a runner-up for the Poet for the Prize in 2014 and for the V.S. Pritchett Prize for Short Fiction in 2008. Clearly, you have got your writing chops, to use the vernacular. We're delighted to actually looking ahead to the upcoming Lincoln Book Festival feature a fantastic writer now who indeed produced probably one of the best ever texts focusing on Jane Austen back in the day, Jane's Fame, How Jane Austen Conquered the World. But we're moving on from that to that question we've been talking about so far on the programme. Can a work of fiction do real harm? It's the creator of Murder by the Book, Claire Harmon. How are you, Claire?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very impressed by myself hearing all that.
Claire. I mean, we didn't even talk about your work at the Universities of Manchester and Oxford, your creative writing at Columbia University in New York City, being Professor of Creative Writing at Durham University. I mean, it's just one thing after another, Claire. Let's face it. Sensational.
I'm very impressed by myself here. Anyway, yes, so... But the latest book is the one that is quite a departure, actually, really, from my other books. It's
absolutely. Sponsored by Bishop Grist University, that's the event, not the book. The title, If Words Could Kill, taking place at 6:15 at the Collection in Lincoln on the 25th of September. We teased ahead to this earlier in the programme, Claire. In 1840, London was scandalised by the murder of Lord William Russell, but behind the murder was a best-selling crime novel which had polarised public opinion and initiated that debate. Can a work of fiction do real harm? Is this an early example, then, Murder by the Book, of copycat murders and people being influenced by works of fiction?
Yes, I think it definitely is. And I came across the crime sort of by accident when I was researching the Bronte life and put it together, because everybody kept mentioning this murder. All the writers of 1840 were mentioning it. And then it did link in very closely with the controversy, literary controversy of the year before. So putting these two stories together and actually just checking through the records to see how valid it was to believe that the murderer had copied the best-selling book from the year before, it actually became more and more obvious that it really did. There was a very strong connection, and that people were quite right to be alarmed, you know, in the way that there is cultural panic around all sorts of violent, extreme artworks. You know, it will always shake people up. But this one didn't just shake people up, it actually did inspire the murderer. That's what he confessed to later.
That's interesting. I mean, the crime itself, apologies if you're just having your tea and a bit concerned about this, just a little warning on this, a brutal crime. The elderly Lord William Russell, of course, killed in his bed, his throat cut so deeply that his head was almost severed. Harsh, in all sorts of scenarios there. Thackeray and Dickens, of course, have followed the investigation of the murder with intense interest, and both men attended and wrote about the execution of the murderer. Of course, that was on the day when the death sentence was very much at the fore. As you say, Claire, what was the story behind the death of this Mayfair aristocrat? Why were writers particularly interested in it? I mean, questions which, two centuries later, almost, we're still fascinated by.
Yes, and at the time, the murder took place in May in 1840, and writers like Dickens and Thackeray were interested because it was a notorious murder of an aristocrat in his bed of the day. But it's only later in the summer, when the murderer confessed, that then the crime became closely connected with the book that had been published by Ainsworth. So it went from being a kind of cause célèbre in town, just a shocking crime, to then being a shocking crime that had this literary add-on that revived and extended the furore around Ainsworth's novel from the year before. And that controversy had been about Ainsworth publishing a book called Jack Sheppard, Jack Sheppard was a real-life criminal from the 1740s, very well known the century before, and so the story was familiar. But Ainsworth wrote it up in an incredibly sexy way, really. He was a very astute professional historical romance writer, and he could really produce a page turner. He'd had a huge bestseller about Dick Turpin earlier in the decade, and when Jack Sheppard came out, everybody there was a kind of mania for that story, and one of the people who joined in the mania for the story was the young man who then later committed the murder. So it was a case of the book having alarmed people about it being too violent, too explicit, too alluring in many ways, and a lot of actual petty crimes had been committed under the aegis of Jack Sheppard during that winter. So people were getting used to the papers being literally full of stories saying another Jack Sheppard! Exclamation mark. You know, magistrates would identify juvenile criminals as Jack Sheppard's. Juvenile criminals would identify themselves as that because they wanted to be associated with a book. But nobody got round to actually doing a serious crime such as murder until the next year. But people, you know, there was a sort of agreement that young people were over-romanticising, grammarising this book by Ainsworth, and going out and thinking that they too could cock a snook at the law, they could steal things. Jack Shepherd in the novel is much less interested in acquiring goods and money. He wants to be famous. So it's a book about an underclass young man wanting to become a celebrity, basically. And he doesn't kill anybody himself. His friend and sidekick slits the throat in the way, exactly the way that my chap slit Lord William's throat the next year. But what Jack Shepherd does is kind of get out of prison all the time. He's got a kind of superhero quality. And young, especially young men, underclass young men of 1839, 1840, were really animated by this fictional example. They loved it.
I'm intrigued that clearly the other end of the Victorian era, you have a certain Jack the Ripper, who obviously sort of connects. You've got a similar name that's part of you. I mean, would that have also been partially influential? Because we've heard various tales about that. And again, your own investigation in terms of this particular aspect, without giving any spoilers away, but connecting with contemporary Victorian figures, including Queen Victoria herself, Elizabeth Barrett, Edgar Allan Poe, and a raven called Grip.
Yes, indeed. Although the Jack the Ripper kind of crime, you know, such a famous crime, I think of that as much more purely psychopathic incident. I mean, the Jack Shepherd stroke, you know, William Russell murder was much more, in my view, to do with a kind of cultural excitement around what the underclass could do. I mean, underclass young men were, think of it as a great example. The aristocrats and the ruling classes would think of it as a huge threat. And, you know, nobody wanted the Chartists, who were, you know, massing at the same time, to be overthrowing the country. And there was
There'd been a revolution in France. We don't want to have this sort of situation here. I mean, what's going on across the Channel? It means almost like we need another Brexit.
Exactly. It was a terribly unstable time. And we didn't get a revolution at that date, but Europe was in ferment. And the Chartist movement of the late 1830s, early 1840s, was really, you know, it led us to the brink of civil disobedience, yeah. And it did really it did shake up the ruling classes, who had just brought in, obviously in 1832, the Reform Act, and they thought they'd kind of expended all the effort they wanted to on enfranchising people, but it wasn't implemented quickly enough, and it wasn't enough. So it, you know, the Reform Act did actually stir up demands for more reform, and led to things like the Chartist movement, working people being much more sort of literate, vociferous, and then having wonderful things like this novel Jack Shepherd, sort of written for them, written for that market, the new mass printing market, which I think is very important, that suddenly there was a big audience for this kind of book, and Ainsworth was providing it. Dickens was holding off a bit. Dickens was saying, oh, that's quite vulgar, but then he also provided his own book just like Ainsworth's. He was copying Ainsworth, and Oliver Twist is a novel of the same school. It's a Newgate novel. It's a novel about criminals who are lovable, basically.
Fagin and of course, Nancy, and the whole range of factors there that are coming on, yeah, on that basis.
Right.
It was chosen as one of the Guardian's 50 biggest books of autumn 2018, but allowing for that, as Alison Weir said, this beautifully produced and impressively researched historical account of a celebrated Victorian murder with a literary twist reads like a thriller. I devoured it in one sitting. Claire, we're going to open up a little bit to two of our fine guests who are in the studio at present. Let's first of all turn to Steph. You listed to this. It's the sort of book which you might sort of put down on your list for Christmas reading, or reading when you're on vacation and so on.
Reading on vacation is probably the only time I do and devour a book. I think if you get into any book, if it's written in a great way, it'll just suck you into it. So.
And Fergus, as an English literature graduate?
Well, when we were studying in first year, we did study the sensation novel, and that was kind of the one that gripped me. So it's a sensation novel about how a murder caused by a sensation novel. So it is a interesting thing there.
Vivid and punchy, as the Spectator says. Mm. And that's in the post-Boris Johnson days, so they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I would say
that's true,
it's
yeah.
too much to go into. The tragedy, of course, Claire, is that because we're doing the Midweek Drive on Wednesdays, I won't be able to make the 6:15 25th of a September event.
Oh.
I know, but we'll send people along because it's going to be fantastic. I'm sure tickets would... I mean, they're probably already selling like hotcakes will be there, but it's well worth accessing. 6:15, in which you'll talk more about Murder by the Book and so on. We must talk about Jane's fame and how Jane Austen conquered the world. We were addressing this last week, that clearly with new TV adaptations and vote coming around, it's fair to say, I mean, was Jane a prototype advocate of women's rights, one of the more contemporary female writers, did you feel?
No.
No? Interesting.
You know, right. Do you mean from the... Because Sanderton, obviously...
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about, precisely, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And because Sanderton's been made over into, I mean, very ingeniously, yeah. It's terribly entertaining, but the material that is by Jane Austen in that is incredibly small, so it's just a setup. Mm. And the feistiness of the heroine in the TV adaptation is alluring, but the heroine in the fragmentary novel is actually somebody who doesn't speak much at all. She is so angry that she... with everybody else, she just is almost silent. So Austen really wasn't doing that. What adaptations of Austen have tended to do in every period is to make her over for, you know, the current generation.
Mm.
Very legitimately, because, I mean, there are things in Austen that you know, are to do with women taking control. You can say that Lizzie Bennet in Pride and Prejudice is a great sort of, you know, outgoing heroine, but she was far from a sort of feminist. She had Mary Wollstonecraft as a contemporary, and there's really very little of that type of content in Jane Austen, I would say.
Indeed, Mary had to, avoid using her own name in the original publications because it wasn't a done thing for young ladies to actually write novels.
So Austen's, you know, Austen's satire does the work of that, but she's very non-explicit about state of women.
Claire, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. You can, of course, go to claireharmon.com to find out further details and so on. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Charlotte Bronte. It's a whole new world. But a reminder that Claire is coming to Lincoln on the 25th of September. It's been fantastic. We've got two final questions which we need to put to you. It's a kind of customer satisfaction feedback thing these days. Everybody asks them, perhaps. Certainly in education they do, from the student's perspective. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
Certainly, it's been lovely.
Then the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of your research, writing and wonderful material?
If you were prepared to have me, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Delightful. Claire Harmon, many, many thanks indeed. Take care and we'll speak very soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And orange juice on this fantastic day. We'll walk the sunny hills of Madrid, laughing all the way. And if you feel you want to run down a ravine, a place that no one else has ever seen before. A flower from the road and place it in your heart. We will hold our breath together. We shall never part. You rescue me, I rescue you. You rescue me, I rescue you. Yes, I do, and you'll be the song. On my way with echoes. song. Ah, I'll buy you one more frozen orange juice on this fantastic day. I'll buy you one more frozen orange juice on this fantastic day. I'll buy you one more frozen orange juice on this fantastic day. I'll buy you one more frozen orange juice on this fantastic day.
Maybe there is just time for one more frozen orange juice before we actually say it's far too cold for that. It's autumn. Well, then again, we'll have maybe global warming. I don't know. Zoe James, and welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Quite excited by the fact that in a few hours from now, we'll be at Burley for the annual Land Rover International Horse Trials. They'll be found innocent. Oh, sorry, I just can't resist it. Okay, it'll sit in there. But sadly, I don't think we'll be able to connect with you this time because you're not going to be there until the weekend, if at all. I mean, Dewberry sales will just go, they'll collapse, won't they?
No, I'm sure they won't. Yeah, unfortunately, you need to take priority this week. So I have to stay there until Friday, and then I'll head up to Burley on Friday evening.
Well, as I say, I'm sure we'll be able to connect before too long as far as life, the universe and various other bits and pieces are concerned. So you're a student vet. Talk to us again about how things have been going over the last few days, and have you had to use frozen orange juice as an emergency anaesthetic in any way, shape or form?
We haven't had to use any frozen orange juice, not that I'm aware of anyway. But yeah, things are going good at university. We're on a small animal rotation these few weeks, so that's coming to an end on Friday, and then I'm released back to Dewberry, which will be nice.
It's kind of like a free transfer, isn't it, really? You kind of get that sort of motion. So we want Zoe more than you want. It's dreadful. Anyway, not to worry, in the studio, two fine folk, Fergus Jeffs, very pleased to be a Leicester City supporting man. They're doing very well. I'm beating
so far
this season.
Well, yes.
Yeah, exactly. C6. In fact, last time I actually started off with this kind of routine, they went on to win the league.
It wins in a lifetime.
And from the joys of Gusto, and indeed a fabulous it's not online, it's a travel mechanism for students who wish to do their graduate studies overseas. Steph Wright, would you like to share with us what this is all about and why Zoe could probably question you about some of the key things? Because Zoe, being a lass from Northern Ireland originally, being over in Britain, she knows a bit about sort of international travel.
Yeah, she's travelling.
Exactly.
Yes, Zoe, we've got this amazing concept called Global Grad, where we offer students really an alternative or something to do in addition to their normal traditional education. They can choose to do an online course. It could be a full degree course, it could be their master's, or it could be a series of short courses, as long as they're delivered online. And then the students travel in a cohort around the world. So we took the first group of students out to Southeast Asia at the beginning of the year. They spent about 4 or 5 weeks in a place called Chiang Mai, where they study their chosen course at co-working spaces. So we put them in a really nice environment to study. And then they get involved in the local community, do volunteering projects, work with animals. We were out working on an elephant sanctuary. So it's just a great experience.
Wow.
It's a bit like, in a nutshell, it's combining your gap year with your education, providing your education can be delivered online. I don't know whether
That's
you can
amazing.
Deliver veterinary degrees online. I wouldn't
Sometimes
so.
Even pronouncing the word veterinary can actually be quite challenging. And you cope with that very expertly, I have to say, Steph. Good stuff. Yeah.
Yes. So
that sounds incredible. What an exciting project.
Yeah, it's good, and we're just getting some traction with it now, so it's something that we're developing. And my daughter's involved with me, and as is my son. So my son's up at Newcastle University doing an economics and business management degree, and he's doing his internship with us. So rather than going to a large PLC companies come to work with us and helping us to develop the concept.
So, is that a bit like teaching your son to drive? I mean, you know, he's doing an internship with you. Are you tempted to actually say, stop wasting my time, this is money now, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think that there's a danger that when you get students coming into a company that it seems it's all about us, experienced people, telling them how to do and developing their skills. But I really want to turn this round because you guys have got the new ideas. I want the ideas to flow the other way from you guys into the business. And so it's very much a two-way flow of information and ideas, especially with a business like Global Grad. Probably a little bit different when they come into a construction business or a more established business. But so tell me about yourself. I just see Zoe here, and I've heard you before. So tell me a bit about yourself, Zoe.
Well, I'm currently a final year veterinary student at the Royal Veterinary College, and I actually met Alex at a show. We were at Bramham, and so part time, I work for a company called Dubai of Ireland, who are like a luxury countryside country living brand, and that's how this all came about, I
suppose. Have we ever looked back, Zoe? I mean, it's a game.
I think that's been every week since Bramham,
Since before you can remember, in many ways, Fergus. It's been that kind of, exactly, living memory from that point of view. And, you know, we get the insight in terms of that, and life continues ever onwards, just as it does with Anna Lewis. Zoe, we need to say those final two questions now. Will you be coming along to the Harrogate Autumn Flower Show? I'll talk to you about that. It's another sort of opportunity. We will talk about various other bits and pieces, but who would you like to ask you the last two questions? Would it be Fergus or would it be Steph?
Let's go for Steph for a change.
This is going to put him on the spot. Has he been paying attention? Will he be listening to us at all? Is he work on this? Go, Steph. No pressure. But Georgia will probably be listening. Go for it.
Oh, my goodness me. Really, all I've got to say, Zoe, is have you...
I'm absolutely
not going to get this right.
Has she had a reasonably interesting...
Have you had a reasonably interesting encounter?
Nice.
Not the right word.
Not close encounter. Yeah, it's good. I'll go with that. Yeah,
With us this evening.
That's all we need.
And...
Hold up. Yeah. Positive there. And...
And will you be joining us again in the future?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yay! If only to talk about things that we'll be seeing at the wonderful Burley, which you might have missed, and other things that we will not miss that you will miss, and you'll be there about some various other bits and pieces. We will connect. Zoe will be back with us in about a week's time or so from now. Actually, Zoe, next week, there's packed. Tessa Snart will be back with us in the studio. Tessa Snart is going to be in the studio.
Oh,
that's amazing. And a whole heap of other goodies, including, all right, we said Kid Creole. Dean Friedman as well. I know, you're saying it.
Well, my goodness.
Yeah, it's all good.
Hang out all the stuff.
Time for XTC. little insight into the mind of Mr. Rees-Mogg there. Shilling for the farmer who brings the sheep in. Shilling for the farmer's wages. Those are the sort of shillings we want. Imperial measurement. Isn't that right? As we sort of lie back on a bench and sort of say, oh, you minuscule pipsqueak intellects and so on. Isn't that right, Anna Lewis?
Yes, absolutely right.
Yeah, let's bring the shillings out and so on. We could actually quote from Robin Pearce in his latest Facebook entry. I don't know, Steph, if you'd actually like to read out Robin's little line there that is very critical for Robin's opening gambit there, the classic few words which says, repeat after me, Alexa, play Siren Radio.
Oh, I'm
channeling nightmare in that line from this point of view. That
Alexa,
way,
play Siren Radio.
Wonderful.
That way, you can hear Alexa loop.
Alex left you, it's all right. It's only a second show. Why would you? Exactly, exactly. And Robin Pearce, set the world to rights on the midweek drive tonight. You just want to sort of flag up. And for once, Fergus, no image of Robin unless he's shrunk himself down to a miniature size and has become part of Alexa. If you have got Alexa out, and indeed I'm very tempted to actually bring my own in, that would have set it off in all sorts of ways, because it would probably say, sorry, can't find the connection. So, are you an Alexa person, Anna?
I find the whole Alexa thing really
scary. You see, Alexa didn't like that answer.
Switches herself off when you interrogate her.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, but I don't know, sometimes I have Alexa say, oh, that's so polite. But if you say, Alexa, please can you tell me? Say, oh, that's so polite. I'm just here to actually answer. Just take the question. It's very good. You're doing quite well with it. I'll bring her back on board. I have to activate her on a regular basis. And there is an extraordinary line which actually has also been tapped into this particular piece, which asks the question if HAL 9000 was indeed the Alexa scenario, what sort of situation would we be faced with? It's well worth looking to, and I'm sure we'll actually share that in the fullness of time, because it's what life's all about, on the social media. Well, Anna, have you been getting up to this week?
I've been trying to work, actually.
Really?
I know, it's such an effort.
Anna, I've just said to Steph that basically you were just chilling and sort of setting this up after a wonderful time in your library activities, etc. You know, you got your postgraduate stuff there. Work? Grief.
This was at the National Archive, and I don't know if any of your listeners actually have ever come across Bleak House by Charles Dickens, but it's all about a chancery case between Dice and Jarndyce, and I've now seen what chancery records look like, and come in a body bag. I kid you not, they come in a body bag, and you have to literally strain yourself to get the thing on the table to unravel it. So that was me today, struggling with a body bag full of parchment to do with the chancery case.
Well, as long as it wasn't a body bag full of body parts, that's the important thing. Steph, anything you'd like to ask Anna Lewis? She's very capable in a kind of wonderful Victorian soul-type way about life, the universe, or indeed life in London, having spent the majority of her last 20 or 30 years in Jersey.
In Jersey? Mm-hmm. Interesting. I was down in London yesterday. I had a meeting in Westminster, and walking out of Westminster Tube Station to all the protests, it was very, very lively. So what was it like around you last night in London?
I think the Trafalgar Square seems to be where it all seems to kick off. The anti-Trump demonstration was extremely well attended and very peaceful, one must say. 2 days later, the protest people...
We're losing you, Anna. You know, I mean, clearly Alexa is actually sort of saying, open the pod bay doors, please, Hal, and let Anna talk, because, you know, we got the sort of notion of it all kicked off in Westminster, and then it's all remained quite peaceful. Long may it remain so. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that we've shifted your time slot this week. Maybe it's something to do with we're doing various other bits and pieces. But, Anna, we've got to put those last two questions to you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us, albeit a lot shorter than normal, on the programme today?
That's fine.
Oh,
that's fine. It's been delight. Thank you.
Good. We got delight there, which was nice.
Yeah.
And we got sort of something delight. It could have been like painful delight. It could have been violent delights if we're channeling Westworld. You know, maybe.
Sorry, the perception here is appalling. I'm in a flight path and the planes keep flying over. Apologies.
This is what happens when you decide to actually shuck up in London and you actually have a flight path going over the whole thing. Honestly. Do they not realise we're in the 19th century?
Oh.
surprisingly enough, via the wonderful search engines that are actually out there, you type in Sound and Country Vision, and it actually is number one, with, of course, Tessa Snott being in full glorious Technicolor at the slap bang in the middle there. You see, that Steph, is I would say an early midweek drive out, because that makes Tessa seem as though she's like 85, when in fact she's only 83. So, you know, we like to work our way through that whole process. Used to be actually from just outside Peterborough, in a little place that I can't even remember now, but is now in deep...
Glinton,
exactly.
And funnily enough, I'm sat in Glinton now. I've parked up.
Wow.
Back to my home route.
You have parked up in Glinton and addressed that whole... So, I mean, this is just awesome stuff here. And Sound and Country Vision, which, of course, last week, as Fergus will attest to, a little bit concerned about the line that sort of went through there, because, of course, the official line, tomorrow on Sound Radio 1.3, tune in from 6.15. An hour and a quarter had already gone by the show there. I mean, you know, Steph's already said in the studio that he can even listen to us via FM, a little bit crackly, but just as far out as...
Collingham,
exactly.
Oh, right, okay.
Use Alexa, it's a lot easier. You can listen to us in Wales then, and indeed overseas. It's amazing. But we know that clearly, Tessa might even be in the studio with us in person next week.
So, yes, I can't wait. I hope so, yes.
In betwixt times, you will, of course, be at a great country event this weekend, which is...
The Long Road. Yeah, I can't wait for that either. So I've got a few interviews lined up for that.
I would hope so. And, of course, it's not necessarily the duration of the road. It's not a long, winding road. It's just the Long Road, as in a country festival. However...
It's not too far. It's Leicestershire. Not too bad.
Yeah, my neck of the woods.
Yeah. Fergus and Leicester, I mean, they just, you know, it's almost as though the two things were meant to be in so many ways. You know,
there's
nowhere we could actually go to which is going to celebrate more than the joys of Leicestershire. Tessa, for the benefit of people who might be sort of saying, so why is Tessa Snott back on the Midweek Drive when, of course, Sound and Country Vision has our very own radio programme monthly basis, although actually it's consecutive weeks this week. I mean, she's on tomorrow night after 7 o'clock. And next week as well with the Long Road Festival.
I know what's happening.
And available as a podcast as well. It's extraordinary, you know. It's just so why? How are you expanding the Snott Media Empire to incorporate, obviously, this Sound and Country Vision track of the week on the Midweek Drive?
Well, I've started this, the track of the week, but next week, do you mean, when I'm in on Wednesday?
No, I'm just talking about this week, actually, that's all. I mean,
okay.
What's the purpose of what we're about to listen to?
Okay, well, I've got a cover track actually for you this week by a duo called American Young. They're from Nashville, Tennessee. I've actually featured them on Sound and Country Vision before. And the cover is by a legendary country singer called John Anderson. It's his 1992 track, and it's called Seminole Wind. And I was listening to American Young's new EP, which is out now. It's called Soundtrack of Your Life, and I could have played the title track, but this particular cover song they've done actually stood out to me, and I thought it was really upbeat, really, really good. So, yeah, so this is why I have chosen this particular track for you today.
And it's fair to say, Tessa, that I was also thinking, what a wonderful way this would connect with Randy Reinholtz in San Diego and Gene Bruce Scott with Native Voices and so on, because it's all about the Seminole, the Native American voices and so on, voices from that point of view. And I'm pleased you actually said it was a cover version, because I thought, I'm sure I've heard this before back in the 90s. This is awesome. It's American Young. Off you go, Tessa. Introduce it, please.
Here it is then, Seminole Wind by American Young.
Black water rolls and the sawgrass sways. The eagles fly. its toll. And in the name of flood control, they made their plans.
I know, Steph, if you had the horse outside as opposed to the Gusto-mobile, you'd be riding off in the sunset with Seminole wind behind you, nothing to do with beans or indeed semi-breve. It's Seminole as in the Native American voice. Fergus, what did you make of Seminole wind?
I really enjoyed that. I thought that it sounded like I could imagine the video, just like a man, you know, riding a horse galloping. Across an American plain.
Exactly.
In the Wild West.
And in his mind, Tessa,
I could picture it.
He would actually hear these words.
English graduate, movie critic, and Leicester City fan, Fergus Jeffs fearlessly outfoxing the Siren Radio Fellowship on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
You always spring that on me. I never know when it's coming.
No, a bit like Christmas, you know?
Well, to be honest, at least it's not bad when Emma gets hers, you know.
Well, Emma Street will probably be back in a week's time, so...
Yeah, you've got a surprise with it.
We've always, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
And, Tessa's always been surprised by hand jingles and I don't...
Yes, I'm always surprised.
A whole range of fun activities. Next week, you'll be with us in the studio, Tessa?
Yes, I do hope so. Yes, we should be there.
And would you like to find out what Steph made of Seminole Wind?
Yes, definitely.
Well, Tessa, it took me back to a few weeks ago when I was out in Canada, went out to Calgary, and my daughter's working out there on a ranch. And so we went to the Stampede. I don't know if you've heard of the Calgary Stampede.
Yes. Mm. I have, yeah.
Well worth a visit. I mean, it's like absolutely going to another planet. So the country music is blasting out from every speaker within the site of the Stampede. And then I'm not a horse rider, but went out horse riding. And what a feeling. It's absolutely amazing through the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, fantastic. So, that's something I'd love to do.
That music could have been blasting out and taking me to another level.
Captures.
Like the soundtrack of your trip. Wow.
See, Tessa, obviously on the case. And talking about Canadians, we'll be joined by the returning Abby. Yes, Abby is coming back to Britain for a fortnight in a couple of weeks' time. So there we are. It's all very exciting. Tessa, you'll be back with us next week. Of course, you're on air tomorrow night. What's going to be on the Sound and Country Vision show tomorrow night at 7 o'clock?
Tomorrow night we have a singer-songwriter and student who's just moved to Nashville, Amy Alexander. So she's going to chat to us all about the move and meeting guitarists and songwriters and all of that. And we also welcome back Joe Hill to the show from the cover band Glasgow. So he's got some exciting news. And just some great music.
There we have it. And if I was to ask you, given that we are going over to Wales with Robin Pearce in a few moments' time, would you suggest Frankie by Sister Sledge, or probably what to my mind is probably the best ever television theme ever composed? Which one would you actually go for? Would you suggest?
I mean, if you're going with the television theme, I don't know, maybe we should go for that one.
I don't want to bias you in any way, shape or form. You know, obviously,
that's okay.
Are you sure? I mean, it's just like...
See, it's a difficult one.
It is.
Go with your option.
We're going to go with that.
We're going to go with that.
Okay. And any Dutch people out there will simply love this.
Steph Wright, I believe you said you have been known to actually play that particular piece in times past, so would you like to identify it for the benefit of our listener?
I think you know that I can't identify it. You're putting me in the hot seat here.
Let's turn to Fergus Jeffs. Maybe, Fergus, you can actually sort of demonstrate quite clearly that things are alive and well and hearty, and any thoughts from yourself?
I recognise the main kind of sting of it, but I don't really know. I don't know if
1970s TV series.
I've heard the theme.
TV series, to be fair, I'm absolutely honest here, probably not as impressive as the theme music by, of course, the Simon Parkes Orchestra. I wonder if we actually just look to press this little button here, maybe it just might give a little bit of assistance. Does that help at all?
Lead writer for the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. Host of Piercing the Veil, regular Stone Tapes and Midweek Drive contributor, and the UK's very own Welsh Caped Crusader. Tis time for Robin Pierce.
No, clearly not. Robin, can you put us out of our misery there? It was straight in, no messing about. Barry Forster, of course, was the lead in this series about a Dutch detective, and, of course, it was called...
Van der Valk.
Yeah, exactly. Van
der Valk. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Youngsters today, eh?
I'll say that.
It's the way forward. Okay, Robin, it's time for you now and your friend Alexa. Put it down, Alexa. Put it down now to explain and give the briefing in terms of how the show's proceeded from the Welsh perspective.
The Welsh perspective? Well, another good tight mixture of various topics, some of which I've picked up on and have questions to answer, and there have been no lows. I actually did really like Seminole Wind, and that's a big thing, because as you know, I'm not a country music fan, but Seminole Wind I liked.
This is good.
Yeah. Okay, let's dive straight in with Cassandra Montag. Now, author of After the Flood, which, as I believe Fergus said, is intriguing. But I have a question. Why is all sci-fi these days trending towards dystopian, a bleak future? Where's the optimism?
Yeah,
why
is the
utopian that things will get worse rather than better? Because if we don't believe in better times... why bother carrying on?
So true. I mean, why bother actually sort of signing up for grads abroad and so on? It's when we're all doomed.
You know, Bartrek told us that one day we will have improved. We will have evolved beyond, you know, material things and monetary gain and polluting everything that we touch, and that we will reach out there and be welcomed among the stars. But, you know, these days it's like all doom, gloom, we're going to die of pollution, and I don't know. Where's my jetpack? Where's my flying car?
bring me my spear of burning swords. Bring me my New Jerusalem. Let's just paraphrase the whole thing. Let's go William Blake, never mind.
Just for a second there, I don't know why I went here, but I pictured you dressed as... Sean Connery in Zardoz.
Steady.
Back away from that.
Robin, I've said your personal fantasies sometimes have to be kept to one side. No, exactly.
Another question that's been running through the programme, particularly with the Claire Harmon sequence, was can a work of fiction do any harm? My personal view is no, not really in of itself. But, of course, there are exceptions. And the exceptions is the user abusing the product. For example, if somebody, as we have touched on, is inspired to do something bad by reading something, and that can be applied to films and games as well. I mean, you, as myself, Alex, will well remember the furore over the brutal murder of a homeless person after Clockwork Orange.
And of course, the tragedy, of course, of Child's Play, where there was no connection whatsoever between obviously Child's
Absolutely.
Play and so on.
Absolutely, yes. The other thing is when a person doesn't understand fiction. Trump,
for example, didn't understand or recognise works of parody or satire at the start of his presidency and dubbed them fake news because he was taking it all seriously and taking all this as personal slight and insult. And look where that's ended up.
Yes, we have mini Trump in Westminster.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, that's a clear case of work of fiction. Again, doing a little bit of harm because the most powerful man in the world has the self-awareness of a six-year-old. Anyway.
Mute, perhaps.
Let's back away from that.
Exactly.
My congratulations to Tessa Leanne Snart on becoming Queen of Media in Lincoln, where she's taking over just about everything.
Right.
And even introducing country songs that I like, which I thought was absolutely incredible. Are you going to ask me to... Oh, I've got one question for you, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
I like the top question over there onto you. What did you make of the Banana Splits movie? Have you seen it yet?
Do you know, I still haven't managed to get around to it. I mean, in the end, it was a double choice. Did I actually watch 3 hours of Westminster on BBC last night at Parliament or the Banana Splits movie? I decided to go for the scarier option, and that's why I actually stayed with seeing the way...
There's actually not much difference, is there?
No, very little. People go along there to ostensibly be entertained and they end up sort of being locked in. You know, even the sort of ways of locked, unlock, lock, unlock. It's there.
Deal, no deal, deal, no deal.
don't. We've got Phil Leonis to do in a few moments. You know, we have to carry on.
Right then, let's give the award of the evening then to Tessa Leanne Snart for... performance above and beyond the call of duty on actually giving me a country song that I like.
Here was I think it would be Nick Smith and his giant, unfeasibly large vegetables, but no.
That takes me to an entirely different place.
I'm so surprised. Who would you like to ask your last two questions from the studio?
Steph. I haven't talked to Steph yet.
Go for it then.
Hi, Robin.
Hey, Steph. Hi.
Steph, you can ask him those last two questions and that'll be the limit of the conversation, unfortunately, due to time. Go for it.
Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Have
you enjoyed this amazing, incredible experience of talking...
Encounter, I'll be fine. Encounter, I'll be fine. That's okay.
It has been a delight.
Okay. And?
Are you ready for Kid Creole next week?
Oh, my goodness, I'm honoured to be on a show with him.
And Dean Friedman, you can't thank your lucky stars that we're not as small.
That's the song I've been trying to figure out that I remembered of his.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, will you play that next week, please?
I think it's pretty much guaranteed. You know,
Dean's
given us the okay, we're okay, it should be fantastic. Next question.
Okay.
And will you be joining us again this same time next week?
We've kind of...
Yes, and meanwhile, talking about songs that get in as earworms and actually can be connected with Phil Leonis's time as an undergraduate. Night.
a sunny afternoon. Night to night.
To ask the question, not have you heard of Alf Cobb, that's another story entirely, but to Steph, was Tarzan Boy by Baltimora one of the tunes you used to play back before you became director and owner of Lincoln City Football Club, before, you know, other things happened, before you set up all these wonderful graduate opportunities, were you a Tarzan Boy Baltimora person?
I wouldn't say it was one of my top ten tunes.
No, all right.
But it has emerged. Graced my decks at some point, without a doubt.
That, exactly, graced your decks, which is clearly the phrase that Philosophical Phil, as I shall refer to him this week, Philosophical Phil will actually sort of relate to. Isn't that right, Philosophical Phil, in Los Angeles?
My mind is so awhirl with poetic thoughts and synchronicities right now. Look, earlier this week, Lily and I started watching a new Showtime series called How to Be a God in Florida, starring Kirsten Dunst, and they played the song repeatedly, and I was up singing along and dancing to it, and Lily said to me, "How do you know this song?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I have two ears and a heart, don't I? How could I not?" And she, like, did not know this chapter of my life, and yet my true heterosexual life partner, Alex Lefchik, knows me all too well. So that was spectacular. That was mind-blowing, the synchronicity there. Thank you. And if I may, before I leave the subject of Kirsten Dunst in her new series, I think she got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And Hollywood Reporter referenced, you know, that's the industry trade paper, it referenced her getting the star. And the only bona fide off her curriculum vitae that they listed in the little blurb about her getting a Hollywood star was Kirsten Dunst, an actress best known for playing Spider-Man's girlfriend.
That's how they described her. Mm.
And, but the upside down kiss was a piece of
it. It was kind of iconic. Yeah.
Okay, well that is an iconic image. I would also point out that Kirsten Dunst is nothing less than one of the defining actresses of her generation.
Yeah, but you don't want to mention Melancholia, do you? I mean, why talk about
her work? Well, Melancholia.
Bring it on.
Her work. How about Fargo? The TV series Fargo.
Oh, yeah, she was on Fargo.
So many just indelible performances.
And she's the cheerleading work that she did. Fantastic.
But the idea of referencing an actress as just that reference in the Hollywood Reporter failed the Bechdel test. But anyway, what I wanted to get to was not the complaint about that, but a celebration of the fact that on the Midweek Drive, this is one of those shows where people who may be very well known for something, and I hate the phrase best known, as you're aware. Leonard Nimoy was best known as Spock. No, he was not. He was most popularly known as Spock, but I would argue that if you saw the one-man plays that he did, you probably got a better sense of who he was than Spock. So it's not best known, it's most popularly known as. And anyway, I like that there are places like the Midweek Drive where people who are popularly known for something get to come on and they get to reveal something about themselves that might be more of a passion project, might be something that is even a guiding mission statement in their lives. And we get to know them actually better as human beings.
Well, there we have it. The perception from Phil, who probably hasn't even heard the show this week, but never mind, it's okay. That's why we have Robin Pierce on, because back in the day, Phil, before he got married, he used to always do a little critique of the show himself. He used to sort of point things through. It's gone these days. Never mind. So, who would you like to speak to then, or who would you like to speak to, Phil? Would it be
awesome.
Now I have a bone to pick with you. You can't blame my wife. You kind of blamed my wife for me making a no-deal Brexit from the director's note sessions of the show. No, I've just been in Brussels trying to negotiate a better deal for my appearance.
This is so true. And do they have any reference of that at all? No, they don't know nothing. They say no. It's all fantasy.
It's because of my longstanding engagement, not marriage, engagement to the Breakfast Club that has prevented me all too often from enjoying the show as it streams live on Siren FM. But I aim to return to the morning edition tomorrow.
Tragically,
it's not tomorrow.
You broke it to him too quickly, Fergus. You know, I was going to build to the whole thing, but actually, it is on. It's just
it's
we won't
been done.
Be live. We did it this morning, Phil. We've time traveled. So tomorrow's breakfast show is a combination of From Mountains to Molecules, taken over by Julia.
But
people.
How? How did you deliver the weather then? I don't understand.
Using our mystical time traveling techniques of traveling at 85 miles an hour or thereabouts in a DeLorean and finding out exactly what the weather was going to be like.
But that's slower than the hurricane winds, and the hurricane can go from a 5 to a 2 in a matter of hours. So how do you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, if it helps, we've actually got an interview with a former Scotland Yard chief inspector who gives some very important top tips about how to actually protect your snacks from various family snack thieves. And behind the television is apparently a very popular place for storing snacks. It's all down to Walker's Crisps, apparently.
And irradiating them. Yeah. You don't need a microwave oven to irradiate your snacks.
What you do with your cheesy Watsits in America is entirely up to your good self. I mean, I don't even know if they're cool.
Our TVs are on a wall now. They're hanging on a wall.
Yeah, we don't have the CRTs anymore.
You'll have to tune in to the program tomorrow between 8 and 10 and find out the answer to that.
This poor guy is still, like, got an old tube television that takes, like, 45 minutes to warm up in the morning. And, look, I've cooked my breakfast.
Exactly. You know, and you say that, but that's one of the reasons why we've got a feature with Jane Voss from Age Concern also on the program to talk about how, you know, elderly people, if they have got those kind of televisions, need to have a bit of help with Cadbury's. It's a whole new campaign.
Why did we pre-record the morning edition?
Because I shall be in Burley at the horse trials, the Land Rover International Burley Horse Trials, an annual event, one of the 5-star events that takes place, probably talking to a variety of fine souls there in the shopping area and beyond, probably actually booking some future guests for the Midweek Drive, as well as doing an on-location report. And then, as if that wasn't enough, I'm driving off to actually see Sam Stone and David J. Howe, and we're doing a recce in Great Yarmouth about the possibility of doing the Stone Tapes live from Sci-Fi Week. And after October 31st, so we're talking November the 2nd here, at Sci-Fi Weekender, in which I'm privileged to actually say I've been invited to actually interview David Gerrold. Now, I will say, Steph, have you ever heard of David Gerrold?
No.
Have you heard of the Tribbles?
No.
My words.
So he's the man behind the Tribbles.
He's the man who created the Tribbles on Star Trek. More Tribbles and Troubles. More Troubles, more Tribbles. There we are. Just a little flag.
I would like to say to David Gerrold, there have been so many iterations of it, I would like to say to him that too much of anything, even Tribbles, is not necessarily a good thing. There's a reference for you.
Yeah.
Now, when you say you might be booking future guests, how would you fit the horses into the recording studio? Because it's not that big.
Well, you know those friends originally from Italy who kind of took over some time in the United States and featured in The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2. There is a sort of notion that you have parts of horses.
Oh,
parts
boy, it went dark. It just went dark.
It just took a turn into the dark side, kind of dark place.
You're not going to be let anywhere near those horses now.
They'll be fine. And as I said, they are all innocent. Free the horses. They are innocent from those horse trials.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You see, I'm sure if they don't want to come on the show, they'll just say,
nay.
Yeah.
I used to be a werewolf, but I'm all right. No. Oh, it's just one thing. It's autumn. You know, what can we say?
That joke you said right there, that one of my friends just used to annoy his girlfriend all the time with that one joke because she hated it.
Yeah. Well,
all the more to do it.
Is the relationship still standing? Or?
No, they're not together anymore. Oh, yeah. Not because of that, but, you know.
But it probably was.
Maybe a contributing factor.
Yeah, exactly. An indicative factor to the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, the Breakfast Club, of which I am a member, as you're aware, you know, it had its roots as an equestrian club. That's how it started. Yeah. It was all horseback enthusiasts who were the leaders in politics and business and entertainment back in 1925, and they would meet together around a campfire in the pre-dawn hours by the stable where our present-day club actually was built. And so all these years later, not only do we still have some of our beloved equestrian symbols, but we consider ourselves a club of hospitality.
I see what you did there. Genius. You see, it's just one, it's relentless. It's like holding a bomb whilst you're doing a photo shoot and it blows off your finger on the basis of you doing it for the art. The art, that's the important thing. It's just like Dean.
Oh, that's
so
a reference to my other.
Do you see what I did
that's
there?
A reference to my other show.
It's like I've been listening to your podcast. We're talking podcasts.
I thought we could keep riding the horse in the direction it was going, unless you feared that we were already beating a dead horse. So I'll just stop.
I think so, because we will give a little tease ahead here to one of the exciting things Steph will be involved with as far as Siren Radio is concerned. And on September the 30th, this very year of our Lord, 2019. Do you know how many people were killed in Vietnam just to get this show on the road? I don't know. But Steph, would you like to explain to Phil why he might be a telephonic link? He could be somebody who's been inspired himself by the podcast.
Well, he's really put me on the seat here,
yeah,
Alex.
Yeah, go for it.
I've come in this evening not to be on the show, but I've joined the show and enjoyed the last nearly 2 hours on the show here. But I came in to talk about an idea for another show for Siren FM. Or Siren Radio, let's get it right.
Mm-hmm. Copyright Gusto Productions.
Very much looking at podcasts and looking at how podcasts can inspire people and motivate people to do great things with their lives. Or
Phil Learness and Dean Hagland have been changing the way people listen to the internet for over a decade.
Yes. And so
12 years.
We're going to give it a go, and we're going to put the first show together, and it'll go out possibly on the same day as International Podcasting Day.
International Podcast Day, Monday, the 30th of September.
Now, will it also be available in podcast form?
It will.
Yes. Yes, it will, Phil.
Now, there's a plan.
I know. It's just, you know, it's like here we have finally a British business operator who actually thinks in joined-up sentences. It's genius.
Do you know what I would like? We have tried. We've been involved with a friend who has tried to rebrand podcast, and I would be really curious if you talk to podcasters what might come, of this conversation. But we are referring to these shows as podcasts, even though they are named for a technology no longer in use. And
like radio.
So I wonder. Well, yeah, exactly. I wonder, will that continue? I mean, will it always be referred to as a defunct technology that many listeners don't even know existed in the first place?
Or perhaps we go full circle, like wireless.
Yeah. Cinema.
It's all wireless now. It's all wireless.
It's all wireless. Yeah. Exactly. It's all wireless. Marconi, what have you started? Come back now. Yes, I mean you. Trying to hide behind St. Peter there. Anyway, that's another little line for various other bits and pieces. Phil, it's reached the time where we need to ask you those last two questions on a show which has seen Nick Smith, William Coles, Cassandra Montag, Claire Harmon, Zoe Jameson, Tessa Snott, Robin Pierce, and Anna Lewis basically provide a whole range of bits and pieces. Fergus, have you enjoyed the programme?
I have. It's a good range of guests.
Back again next week?
Yes, I will be. Yeah.
Loveless. Has it been good for you sitting in for the last hour or so once you've got yourself parked, basically, Steph?
It has. It's been fascinating. I should have done a bit more research on the guests so I understood a bit more about what was going on. But no, interesting. Great to be in this environment.
I will come back.
Well, there you have it. And would you like to put those unique questions?
He's waiting for me. Listen to Fergus.
Okay, I'll give you the mask.
Okay, then. Right, well, Fergus, no pressure, but, you know, this could be you acting as a role model stuff.
Okay, Phil, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show this evening?
Yes, I did. It was great fun.
And will you be joining us on the show again in the near future?
Who knows? I mean, apparently not. The show's only pre-recorded now.
Next week, we are live, and live on a show which at this particular moment in time, Phil Learners, and if this doesn't get you out of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, I don't know what will. Tessa Snart's going to be in the studio. Kid Creole's going to be connecting with us from Sweden, and from New York City, we have the fabulous Dean Friedman as well. You know, I mean, I know we're trying to ramp up the sort of volume in competition with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. I know where we are. We're complimentary, really, from that point of view. But really, seriously, I tell you. Phil, we'll speak to you next week. And, of course, you can listen to Richard Fitzwilliams as well tomorrow, because he did two cracking movie reviews today. And one of them was actually focusing on the extraordinary tale of Angel Falling, which, of course, as you know, features that wonderful, talented actor, Gerard Butler, who, of course, is again, saving the president in this particular review after London falling, after Olympus falling, and presumably Cumming falling as well. It's another line entirely, which should probably be number four in the series, Dominic Cumming falls. Phil, would you like to say happy trails?
Ah, good. I'm glad we went there. I will say happy trails. Happy trails.
Let's say it all together, folks. Happy trails.
Happy trails.